This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Health experts say that ADHD, that's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, is the most common behavioral disorder that starts during childhood. However, it does not only affect children. People of all ages can suffer from ADHD. And the ramifications of having this disorder are many and far-reaching. We'll hear with more on this as Dr. Stephen Ferrone, a distinguished professor of psychiatry at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Ferrone. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Linda.
So first, help us understand, what do we actually mean by the term ADHD, which I know stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder?
So ADHD, it's a disorder that starts in childhood, before the age of 12, by our diagnostic requirements. It consists of three syndromes, if you will. There's inattention, inability to pay attention to things that are happening, particularly in the classroom, which is makes schoolwork difficult. Hyperactivity, the little child running around too much, climbing on furniture, causing trouble. And impulsivity, acting without thinking. The child that loses a ball, rolls into the street, and they run into the street without looking for cars. Impulsive behavior.
Is this the same as ADD? I know those terms.
Yes.
One preceded the other. Explain that.
Well, yes. But what happens is that as the diagnostic nomenclature, as we call it, progressed over time. And in the 1980s, we used the term ADD, attention deficit disorder, and it was diagnosed with or without hyperactivity. So people called it ADD. And that term has actually stuck with us today. People use the term ADD, even though later on, by 1990, we changed the term to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder to really convey the sense that both sets of symptoms were prominent in the disorder, that the hyperactivity wasn't less prominent than the inattention. So it was merely a change in the name that helps doctors think about it. But still, some days people will talk with ADD, and it's really the same thing.
So they are the same. And is it true, then, you really can't have one without the other? I mean, you can't have the attention problem without the hyperactivity, or can you?
Actually, you can. You can have one without the other. In fact, the way the disorder is diagnosed, it's possible if you have many, many symptoms of inattention, you can be diagnosed as having ADHD, and the doctor will code primarily inattentive, or you can have ADHD where you're mostly hyperactive, impulsive, and the doctor will code it that way, or you can have what we call combined ADHD, where you have both. But we consider it one disorder, and the treatments are the same for the disorder, regardless of the subtype of it.
Today, what's the incidence? What do we say when we're talking about children?
In children, the incidence is about 5%, and that's pretty constant across the world. There have been probably, at this point, hundreds of studies that have been done in different countries, and the average is about 5%.
Has it increased or decreased or remained the same?
There's a big debate and misunderstanding, really, in the media in particular about that. The actual prevalence, meaning that if a researcher goes out into a community and looks at the prevalence of the disorder with standardized methods, that prevalence has not changed over time. What has changed over time is you might think of it, the rate of diagnosed ADHD. The doctors are diagnosing more of it as determined by surveys in which we ask parents, is your child diagnosed with ADHD?
So also there could be more attention to it, in effect, or more awareness of it, leading to more frequent
diagnoses.
Exactly,
and that's really the issue, are doctors doing a better job because they're identifying children with ADHD, or are they over-diagnosing the disorder? My view of it is that It's extremely important that children be diagnosed with this disorder as early as possible and as accurately as possible. And if we look at the diagnosis rates from the latest reports from the CDC, the diagnosis rate is about 5%, which is about the prevalence of the disorder. So my view of it is that doctors are doing a good job because they're actually diagnosing the disorder when it occurs.
Does there remain the controversy over its origin or its etiology, what causes it? In other words, first of all, do we really know what causes it? And secondarily, I know there's been some controversy suggesting either it's organic, meaning the kid comes wired that way, or there's something in the environment, maybe even neonatally, you know, or prenatally, that is making children this way.
Right. Well, it's very clear. There's really no debate in the, I would call the serious academic world about ADHD. There's lots of debate in the news media. There's lots of debate on the internet. And most of that parents should ignore because there's mostly people who are saying things without the credentials to say them. They haven't read the scientific literature.
Or there's no evidence.
They haven't done the research studies. Or there's no evidence to support what they've said. So number one, be very careful about what you read in the media. Even the New York Times. I mean, there's reports in the Times that have errors in it that are, unbelievable, really, from my point of view. The causes of this disorder are extremely complex. I've been researching this for 30 years, and at the outset, I hoped it would be an easy problem to solve. It turns out it's a difficult problem. We know from twin studies, where you look at twins that are identical versus twins that are not identical, those studies tell us it's very clear that there's a strong genetic component, that genes play a fairly strong role.
So there's some wiring here.
So there's definitely some wiring that occurs early on. And most of the environmental risk factors that we know about also occur early in life. So, for example, if a mother is drinking too much alcohol during pregnancy, we think that affects the fetal brain and that affects ADHD. If the child is exposed to certain toxins, pesticides early in life, that can increase the risk. If a child is born, has problems, very low birth weight children are more likely to have ADHD later in life. Now, first of all, parents shouldn't get worried to think, oh my God, I had two glasses of wine every night when I was pregnant, my child will have ADHD. It doesn't work that way. It's not as if these risk factors guarantee that you'll have ADHD. It's the cumulative effect of having many, many risk factors that leads to it. So, for example, a lot of my work is in genetics. We had hoped in the 1980s, 1990s, that there might be one, two, three, or four genes that we could discover that would be the causes of the genetic part of ADHD. It turns out what we know now, probably hundreds, maybe thousands of different genes combine to lead to what we call a susceptibility to the disorder.
And even at that, it's only the susceptibility rather than a definite direct relation.
Exactly. In some cases, there may be some rare cases where somebody has, for example, a large deletion of a chromosome that might be what we say, a necessary insufficient cause. But those are very rare. The large majority of cases are created by genetic susceptibility interacting with their environment.
So bottom line at this point is we don't really have a single answer to what causes it. It's obviously the nature and nurture concept here. Is it something in beyond the kind of environmental factors that you have just outlined, which are more kind of organic, meaning whether somebody is drinking, are there behavioral environments that could be more conducive to either its development or obviously its diminishment?
Right. So that's a good question. First of all, there's no evidence that parents cause ADHD. When we, you know, psychiatry has gone away from blaming mothers for all childhood disorders.
Including autism, which was one of the big ones.
Including autism, including schizophrenia. There was the famous refrigerator mother that caused disorders. Mm-hmm. That's really been debunked. We do know, however, that children that live in, for example, chaotic family environments where there's a lot of conflict in the family, that increases their risk for a worse course of ADHD. Their ADHD will be worse and a worse incidence of ADHD. So part of the therapeutic approach to ADHD is to try to modify the child's environment to lessen those types of problems.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink On Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with researcher and professor of psychiatry at Upstate Medical University, Dr. Stephen Ferrone, and we're talking about ADHD. Well, you've done all this extensive research, so help us understand some of the things that you've looked at and how that impacts potential treatment or help for children with this problem.
Well, fortunately, there are very good treatments for ADHD. They roughly fall into two categories. There's your medication treatments and there's your non-medication treatments. So in the medication treatments, the most famous one is Ritalin, which has received a lot of press in the United States and elsewhere. Ritalin is what we call a stimulant drug. It's also in the same class of drugs as Adderall, which is another drug that's pretty well known. But there are many drugs in this category. Vyvanse is a newer drug that has come out in this category. And there are others as well. The stimulant drugs operate in the brain on a molecule known as a dopamine transporter. And by blocking that transporter, we think it increases the amount of dopamine in the brain and helps to relieve the symptoms of ADHD. It turns out that these drugs are, if we look at all the drugs that are used in psychiatry for different types of disorders like schizophrenia, depression, et cetera, the ADHD drugs are actually among the most effective. These are actually extremely effective drugs that they don't cure the disorder. In other words, you don't just take it for a few weeks and then you're better. It's a lifelong, potentially lifelong treatment if your ADHD persists, and we can talk more about persistence later. There are also drugs that are non-stimulant drugs, another class of drugs. The most well-known one probably is Strattera. That's been around a long time, also known as atomoxetine. We have long-acting guanfacine, which is Intuinive, trade name Intuinive, and there's Capvay, which is a long-acting clonidine drug. These non-stimulant drugs are also used to treat ADHD. They tend to be a little less effective than the stimulants, but they have the advantage of not having there's a lot of regulatory requirements about stimulants because stimulants are potentially addictive. And many parents don't like taking stimulants for that reason.
And there's a lot of controversy around how many kids have been put on medication. It's almost like a knee-jerk, well, my kid is hyperactive, we're going to give them lifelong commitment to medication. So that has to raise some issues ethically as well.
Right. Well, it does raise issues, and that issue is best handled in the doctor's office, where the doctor makes an accurate diagnosis of the disorder. He treats the child with the appropriate medication, and if he decides medication is appropriate. Now, in some cases of milder ADHD, they might start with a family therapy. We can talk a bit about that later as well. That the ethical issue in my mind is the child getting the right treatment? And it's actually unethical to withhold treatment from a child who really needs it. And I think that's actually the biggest mistake that's frequently made.
Because I think one of the things that needs to be underscored is that when you have something like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, your ability to learn, your ability to concentrate, your ability to make the most out of your environment is challenged. And without that additional help, whichever form it takes, whether it be medication or some kind of a behavioral, you know, implementation of their environment, that child is really at risk.
Absolutely. There's a very big risk associated with non-medicated ADHD, which some parents don't understand. They're worried about the risks of medication, and they forget about, my child's not being medicated, they're not making friends, they're not doing well in school. And those problems compound over time.
I don't want to run out of time. There's so many questions I have to ask you, and I know you have so many answers for me. Briefly, this can persist over a lifetime, ADHD. What do you see in adults, and how will somebody necessarily who's been diagnosed as a child be required to take medication throughout their lives?
Not necessarily. We know that about one-third of the cases by young adulthood, one-third of the cases go into complete remission. Their ADHD essentially disappears.
So they've grown out of it, so to speak.
They've grown out of it, and there are people who have done neuroimaging studies where they show that the brain actually changes in these people, and their brain, if you will, gets better. And they've grown out of the disorder.
Somehow they've matured out of it.
Whatever that means. Exactly. And what doctors will do is that they will test, they will take the young adult or even sometimes the teenager off the medication for a while to see if they still need it. And that is good advice to test to see whether the disorder has indeed remitted.
But basically there are treatment modalities that incorporate changing the environment, helping them become more structured and
absolutely, all
of that kind of thing. And they can be effective as well. But generally, is it a combination of the two that works best?
The combination is always a good idea. My approach would be, when it starts with medication, if that doesn't solve all the problems, then you use family therapy to try to solve other problems. If it's an adult, you implement something called cognitive behavior therapy to help the adult learn to organize their world better. But that cognitive behavior therapy really doesn't work well unless the patient is also taking medication.
So that combination really is kind of a crucial factor.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm afraid we're going to be running out of time. Is there some overview statement you'd like to make in terms of what you would recommend to parents if they have concerns about ADHD?
I would say consult a mental health clinician, your pediatrician, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, as soon as possible. Don't wait. If you have a child who's 5 years old who seems like they're having trouble and you wait a year, that's one more year that they're exposed to all the problems of ADHD. The treatments that we have are sometimes very quick to work, and you'll know very soon if they work or they don't work.
Thank you so very much. My guest has been Dr. Stephen Ferrone, a distinguished professor of psychiatry at Upstate Medical University and obviously a world expert in ADHD. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.